Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to a special edition of ScaryCast. This is Dr. John. Glad to have folks with us tonight. We've got a super guest, someone that I just recently met through some connections that started from the Georgia Bigfoot Conference a couple of weeks ago. And the gentleman is Timothy Renner. Good evening, sir. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great. Happy to be here.
Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate you being here. Timothy is an author. He's got 4 books out. He's got a podcast that's very popular. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your 4? We got another topic that's near and dear to my heart for just a little bit later. But tell us, first of all, about your 4 books. You described it to me, and I said, well, this sounds so good. I want to let people here on ScaryCast know about it. So tell us about your books.
Right. Well, I've done 2 books that are historical Bigfoot accounts. The first one's called Bigfoot in Pennsylvania. The second one's called Bigfoot West Coast Wildman, and that covers California, Oregon, and Washington State. And they're just collections of old articles about, what I believe are Bigfoot creatures from old newspapers and other sources. Going from the, 1800s, some mid-1800s, I have 1 or 2 that are a little bit earlier than that. Hard to find reports much earlier than the mid-1800s, but then they're going up to the 1920s. Then I have 2 books. One's called Beyond the Seventh Gate, and the other's called Don't Look Behind You. And those are kind of more my explorations into the paranormal phenomenon. Beyond the Seventh Gate deals with some local, to me, that's York County, Pennsylvania, kind of south central Pennsylvania, some local urban legends that I disprove, but the area that I talk about, or those urban legends are about, does end up having a lot of really weird stuff that happens there. So I kind of get into that as well. And then the Don't Look Behind You is my most recent book, and that goes back to that same area. It's called Toad Road. And I add my own experiences to those of witnesses and so forth that I've documented.
Well, that sounds great. Now, tell me about Toad Road. Do you think there might be a Toad Man up there?
Well, yeah, I believe there is. I didn't think so for a long time. We do get a lot of Bigfoot sightings there, and I thought basically everybody was seeing Bigfoot. And I had gotten one story of someone who was attacked by what was called a green-haired monster in the newspaper back from 1974, I believe, in the area. But I still thought that's probably a Bigfoot. They got confused or maybe it had some algae in its hair or something like that, like sloth skit. But then a woman called me one night. It was after midnight. She called me. My phone rings, and she says, "You got the guy that writes about Toad Road?" And I said, "Yeah, that's me." And she said, "Well, I hear she said, "Do you know about the Toad Man?" Now, she told me a bunch of other stuff. She told me about like somebody chasing her up and down the road in the car and stuff. And there was a guy that lived out there that a lot of people said was responsible for a lot of this stuff. He was a doctor. It's not true. He was actually a real, real good guy. But in any case, a lot of people kind of called him, the Toad Man, or said he had toad sculptures around the house. So I thought she was talking about this human, this guy. But there's something about the way she said it. And I said, "Well, wait a minute. What do you mean Toad Man?" And she said, "Oh yeah, there's a Toad Man that lives in the creek." So this road, Toad Road, it kind of runs parallel to a big, real big local creek. It was actually, in the old days, they called it a river, that was used to haul supplies up. There's a very old iron forge called Cador's Forge right at the end of this road, right where the river meets the Cador's Creek meets the Susquehanna River, rather. And they used to haul supplies out of York up on barges along on this creek. And I think it was a tow road. I think that's how it got the name Toad Road. But in any case, this woman was telling me about this Toad Man that lives in the creek. And she said, yeah, he was really scary. He lived down in the bottom part of the creek. And then lo and behold, I found this article in the newspaper. And this is from, let's see, 1905, rather, 1905, the Wilkes-Barre record. And it says, York, Pennsylvania, October 22nd, people residing along the river midway between Clyde and Goldsboro, now that would be about 8 miles away from Toad Road, are mystified and some alarmed over the sight of a strange creature that has its abode in the Susquehanna River. Thus far, but two men and their wives have seen the thing. It has been seen in broad daylight. As it has been seen in broad daylight, more credence is given to the story than would be if it had been seen at night, when people were more prone to see things. The strange creature, whether fish or animal, is described as being as large as a man. When it came up out of the water, erect like a man, and is described as looking like a man without arms. Those persons who have seen it declare that they are not victims of an optical illusion. So the article says fish looks like a man, but to me, if you know something coming out of the water, a fish man or a frog man, might look the same to people, you know. So I did find kind of confirmation in the newspaper of her report of this toad man.
You know, it's interesting. People, okay, Lyle Blackburn is a friend of mine, and he just wrote and published his brand new book, Momo, The Curious Story of the Missouri Monster. And there are a massive number of stories in the Central Plains regions that kind of focus around Missouri of newspaper stories about basically some type of monster. And he spent years going through newspaper reports, articles, and everything. And he said, they're just all over. It's not like it's not an isolated thing. There are thousands of these stories. And I think it's a little silly for people to dismiss so many articles, don't you? Because I know you found hundreds and thousands of articles about Bigfoot sightings and Toad Man and all this, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think a lot of times people nowadays they go, oh, people didn't know what they were looking at back then. And that's a really ignorant way to look at things, I think. I think people knew exactly what they were looking at. And, you know, sometimes you get some exaggerations in these old papers, but for the most part, I think people were trying to, you know, report the news. And for instance, there was what they called gorillas in the 1920s. It was a gorilla flap throughout Pennsylvania, and you can follow it. You can follow these things were tracking through central Pennsylvania and on down to southern Pennsylvania, and you can follow the newspaper reports of these things as it moves through the state. Pretty much, I think it was more than one of them. You know, I don't think people are making that up, you know, to make up a trail of now, you know, these weren't gorillas. These were obviously Bigfoot. You know, they're talking about, you know, 7 foot tall thing that they just called them gorillas back then because they didn't have the word Bigfoot, you know, and they didn't know the word Sasquatch back then. And they saw something big and hairy, you know, and they thought, oh, it must be a gorilla. So in any case, you know, there's no way these newspapers were not working together in any way to try to, you know, make this work out where you can follow them in a nice path through the state. And people weren't making this up. You know, back then, just like today, people get ridiculed if they brought this stuff up. And they had no reason to lie for the most part. So, yeah, I absolutely think there's a ton of reports out there and happy people are finding them now.
Yeah, it's, you know, one thing I found that when I host these conferences, like it started with the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, and everyone that walked into that door, they paid their money and they would like come around the counter and say, I need to tell you something. And I knew what it was. Almost every single person that came in there had a Bigfoot or a lizard man story or something. And in fact, I've got one of them right here. The guy drew me a picture of a lizard man foot. This is a lizard man type foot that we are familiar with down in the Bishopville area near Columbia, South Carolina. And this was not just some uneducated person. This was a trial attorney in Kingsport, Tennessee, with his very nice PhD carrying fiance. I mean, you know, they're a very nice couple, and he just wanted to talk to me about it because he was petrified at what he'd seen. Mm-hmm. He said, we saw a lizard man. We were in the woods. Now, some attorney, and by the way, this is one of the guys that has his billboard all over Kingsport, Tennessee. You know, he is standing there telling me I've got his phone number. I talk to him occasionally just to check in with him and see if he's found any more lizard men or any Bigfoot up there. And then I had two evidences of Bigfoot hair that were actually given to me from people who came there. So many people see these, and it's like our culture doesn't want to recognize the fact that, yes, there are anomalous creatures out there. There are UFOs. Let me ask you this, okay, because you and I have really not talked very much, so I get to do some cool Q&A. Have you ever seen a UFO?
Yes, I have.
Can you share that with me?
Yeah. I was young. I was about 8 years old, I believe. And my mother came and woke me up and said, "Do you want to see a UFO?" And what 8-year-old is going to say no to that? And she took me outside. I was with one of my brothers and my sister, and we were standing in the driveway, and it was over the trees on the horizon line. It was huge. I mean, it didn't look that huge when I was young, but the more I think about it, I didn't understand proportion as well. For it to be as big as it was, you know, over the trees on the horizon, it had to be pretty massive, and pretty much, saucer-shaped roughly, and had lights going around the middle. Interesting thing is, this sounds kind of crazy, but it was 1978, and things were different back then. They got bored and went inside, and I wanted to still watch it. And I had a very protective dog, and, I lived on a farm, so it really wasn't a big deal for me to be out at night by myself just standing in the driveway. So they left me out there, and I was watching it. And then the next thing I remember, I was watching it from inside the house through a window. So there may or may not be some missing time associated with that sighting.
There was missing time, it sounds like to me.
I think you'll agree.
That is amazing. I had no idea. And I mean, I'll tell you my story. My parents, I am from the mountains of North Carolina, a little town called Morganton, lived 2 hours from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where Wake Forest University is. So sometimes my parents would just come pick me up at Wake Forest and bring me home for the weekend. It was really nice of them to do. They didn't have to. So they picked me up in Winston-Salem, and there had been a lot of stories in the Winston-Salem Journal about UFOs all over the Winston-Salem area. So we're driving back, and we're like three exits away from where we would turn off to go to my home. And I looked up, and there was a cigar-shaped green UFO. I said, look right up there to the right. And I saw my dad look. He was driving, and my mom was sitting in the back seat, and she looked, and we looked for, I don't know, maybe in about a minute. And so I can't remember why we stopped looking, but we did. And then when we got home, I said, "Wow, wasn't that really crazy? That green UFO that we saw, because it was just like the reports from the Winston-Salem Journal Sentinel newspaper." And my father said, "Son, we're not going to discuss that. So just stop." And what's really interesting is this is the first time I have realized it. I don't remember how it ended. I know that we saw it. And I remember looking back, and my mom was looking through the window, in the rear passenger side. My dad was looking up. He was driving and looking, and I was too. But what's interesting is I don't remember how the story ended, but I remember getting home. So
right,
we might have had some. I never thought about it until tonight. Have you ever discussed things like this with somebody? It's like I've got two other instances of disjoint memories. Can I share those with you? Would you mind?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. One was I remember seeing a Bigfoot walk across Highway 17 in Pawleys Island, South Carolina. I used to live down there. That's about 35, 40 minutes away from Myrtle Beach. And I remember seeing it. It was near dusk. I can't tell you what happened before it. I can't tell you what happened after it. But I have a vision of seeing a Bigfoot lumbering across the highway. It's a 4-lane highway with a median. And then as a kid, I remember seeing two silver small people that looked like UFO people. I didn't know what to call them back then, sitting in my window in my room. One was much smaller than the other. It was like a dad and a son, or a big brother and a little brother. I don't remember how I got to the hallway to look into my room. I don't remember what happened afterwards, but I absolutely remember seeing them. That's what I would call a disjoint memory. I've got a Bigfoot one, and I've got a space alien one. And again, I know what I saw. I can see it in my head. I can certainly see this one, the UFO thing. I didn't really think to check out the details. But then as I think about it, I don't know why we would have stopped looking at it. And I sure don't remember in my story, you know, I don't have any recollection, or did I tell you that, well, it just sped on off. So, I mean, it's like, you know, there's an element of lost time there. And a lot of people have that. I know they do.
Yeah. And, you know, lost time is more common with Bigfoot sightings than some people would have you believe. It happens quite a bit.
Well, it really does. And don't know what to say, but it's an interesting thing. And I'm very fortunate that I run events and I get to study this and think about it. I think it's an interesting phenomenon. It's something that is absolutely underserved, under-researched. It's like we just had Bigfoot and Company, the podcast, on today. Had a gentleman named Michael Harrell, and he was talking about UFOs and Bigfoot and the combination of them. And he has a story that is radically different than a good friend of mine who has a similar story. It's like the protagonist is really different. So it's very interesting to me to hear people's stories, and a lot of the details are similar, but a lot of them are diametrically opposed to each other. And it's like,
who's
the bad guy, who's the good guy? And I think it's, I just think it's wonderful that here we are in 2019, 2020, and we can kind of look at this and reflect on it. Now, it is certain to me that, you know, the government's not going to help give us any help. You can just forget that. I think a lot of this these are reports. These are sightings that they don't want discovered. They don't want explored. It could just be so problematic if all of a sudden there was an official New York Times headline that said UFOs are real. They have now visited President Trump. If something like that would cause the largest amount of panic in history, don't you think?
Yeah, possibly. I also think that possibly that the government doesn't know as much as we think they know, and they don't want us to know how much they don't know about the phenomenon across the board as well. Because if they had to come out and say, yeah, these things are real, but we don't know what the heck they are, I think then people start going, well, wait a minute. You know, I think they want to appear like if there is something there, that it's they know exactly what's going on, you know.
Well, you know, Tim, you are the first person that's ever said that, and I don't get any notion of disinformation from you. I think that's a very honest opinion of yours, and I like it. I like it very much. I'm going to include it now in my discussions with folks about UFOs. I think we know some things, but I think there are a lot of things we don't know.
And I think the government probably knows different stuff than we know, and they probably do know more. They probably have, you know more, but I don't. I just get the feeling they don't have all the answers either, and they don't want to admit it, you know. But I don't know. You know, I honestly don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe
I don't know.
Maybe the answer.
Maybe you truly know more than you think you do. I like that, and it's. I think it's important. I mean, yeah, it really is. So, all right. So we've done the UFO thing. And I've mentioned my Bigfoot sighting. It's a disjoint in time thing. Have you ever had yourself a Bigfoot sighting?
Well, I don't know. I've seen something big in the woods. That's all I can say. I didn't see a head, and it was quadrupedal. You know as well as I do, that doesn't eliminate Bigfoot, the fact that it was quadrupedal. But I can't tell you exactly what it was. It was quick. It was faster than anything I've ever seen, and it was bigger than anything that should be in the woods of Pennsylvania. But I can't honestly say 100% that's what I saw.
About how long ago was it?
About 2 years ago.
2 years ago, were you by yourself?
I was, yep. There's a good story that goes with it. If you want me to get into it, it's a little bit of a story,
I
but
would love for you to share it. Great.
so I was it was on that road, that Toad Road area that I researched with my friend, and well, I mean, I researched, but I was there with my friend. I was hiking one day. This was in March, and we didn't do the whole road. It's about maybe a 3 mile stretch or so of an old closed road that it shouldn't. It's private property. I have permission to be there. No one should be out there during hunting season. There's hunters out there, but other than that, no one should be out there. It's not a nice place to hike. It's easy to get lost. The trails are, pretty rough and so forth. So no one should be out there. But in any case, I was out there with my friend, and I've been picking up skulls in the woods since I was a little kid. I've always been fascinated by them. As long as they're clean, I don't like gore. I'm not that guy. And they have to be nice and clean, and sun bleached, and I'll pick them up because I'm an artist. I like to draw them and stuff. And we walked in, and we did about half the hike maybe. And for whatever reason, my friend had to turn around, so we turned around and walked out. And on the way out, right in the middle of the trail, there was a little raccoon skull that I didn't see when I was walking in. Now, it's very unusual. It's possible I could have stepped over it, but I'm really tuned to that color, that bone white color, because I collect them. I've been since I kid, like I said. So I picked it up. I'm like, oh, neat, look at that. Put it in my pack, and we left, and we made plans to come back in 2 weeks. Well, 2 weeks went by, and he couldn't make it. And he said, well, let's go next week. And then the following week, he couldn't make it again. So I said, well, you know what? I'm going to go out there alone. I'm a completist. I like to do the whole hike. I don't feel like I've finished anything if I don't do the whole hike. So I went out there. I decided to I'll do the whole hike. Well, now it's in April, and now it's real grown up. So there's stinging nettles and thorns, and everything's grown up, and it's just a nasty, nasty hike now. But I'm still determined to do it because, like I said, I just want to do it. I like to hike the entire road 2 or 3 times a year, a couple times in the spring, a couple times in the winter, if I can. But in any case, I go out there and I get to the place on the trail, right about the place now I'm headed south. I get right about to the place where I found that raccoon skull, and I hear something up ahead. And I looked up and I saw something. And my first thought was moose. And I'll tell you why. It has nothing to do with the fact that it particularly looked like a moose. I'd been hiking in the woods of Western Massachusetts one time, and I saw a moose. And I was taken aback both by the size of the thing. I grew up on a farm in Maryland, so I was thinking, you think moose, you think like big horse or something, but this was absolutely massive. They're massive creatures. And the way it moved, it just moved in a it the gait is different than a horse's gait. So that's the first thing I thought. And I'm, as I'm looking at this thing, I'm trying to run through my head, and it just shot off. It shot going south, so it's headed, away from me, the same direction I'm moving, and didn't make another sound as it went through. Now, it's going through briars and weeds and trees, and just not a sound, and faster than anything I've ever seen. Just a zip, just gone, like in a flash. So, this is not because I'm brave. This just happened to be the way things worked out. I headed directly after it. In fact, later on, I sat down and I thought, man, if something was trying to lead you into a trap, you took the bait, dummy. I was almost translate. Like, I really didn't think about it. I just headed off after this thing as fast as I could go. I'm not super fast, and like I said, the trail's real nasty. There's, thorns. There was a copperhead snake that day crossed in front of me. I remember that was the first time I saw a copperhead down in there. And I came out with a bunch of ticks. Usually ticks leave me alone. I usually don't have a problem with ticks. That day I was like, had ticks all over me. So it's just a nasty, nasty hike. It's not a fun place for people to be. But I followed in the direction that this thing went for probably a half mile or three quarters of a mile, and I came to a place in the trail, and there was a deer skull impaled on a branch at eye level. And that's the cover of my book, Don't Look Behind You, is that skull. And it stopped me. It kind of like snapped me out of the trance, because it was right there in the middle of the trail, and it wasn't there a couple weeks before when my friend and I were out there. So something with hands had to put this thing on a branch in the middle of the trail, you know, in that time between the time that I was there before and that time. And like I said, people shouldn't be down there. I looked around, I couldn't believe it. It was a nice clean skull. And people asked me, they're like, do you think it was a warning? Do you think it was a warning? I did not get a bad feeling from it at all. The feeling I got, for whatever it's worth, and you tell me what feelings are worth, I don't know. When I picked it up was, you liked that little raccoon skull, did you? Well, here you go. I got something real good for you. That was the feeling I got. Like, oh, if you like that little raccoon skull, you're really going to like this. So I picked it up, this deer skull, I put it in my pack, I still have it, and it was perfectly clean, you know, beautiful. And kind of that ended my hike for the day. It kind of snapped me out of it. I was kind of like, whoa, what's this? And then I kind of hiked out of there. I never did finish the hike that year. I finished it in the fall, I believe. But in any case, ever since then, on about 70% of the Bigfoot investigations I go on, I find skulls, perfectly clean skulls, I'm not digging around for them. They're like laying out for me. And these are places that I've never been before. And I've got so many now. Like I said, I've been collecting since I was a kid. I've found more in the past 2 years since finding that one than, you know, I have in my entire life. I've got so many now. They're everywhere. And I find them on Bigfoot investigations. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy sounding, but it's, you know, that's what happens.
Well, not at all. Number one, I have a very close friend, Robin McCray. She does a lot of mind speak with Bigfoot and with other cryptids. Now, she is world renowned. I don't know why in the world she came down to South Carolina to live. She and I have become very good friends. We talk once or twice a day. And I would like, here's what she'll tell you, and I want the three of us to maybe have a conversation. We might even record it as an episode. But she will tell you that they know you're coming, and they know what you like, and that's a friendly gesture. I mean, it just is.
I've never taken it as anything negative at all. Except, it's always been just like, wow, like amazing to me, you know?
Well, you see, you're getting the message. And what Robin she's teaching me about mind speak. And she said that it's not always about words that you hear. It's about images and impressions. And, but you know that the images and impressions you're getting, they're just not normal. They're just not, you know, out of thin air. And, she's taught me to be very, very attentive to that. And I would say, I will ask her if, I would love for the three of us to at least have a phone call and for her to share some experiences with you, if you wouldn't mind. But I think what you're having is physical manifestation of mind speak. And I think it's wonderful.
I'm absolutely, you know, completely open to that, as a possibility. Sure. I mean, another time a guy called me up, he said, "You're not going to believe this. I saw Bigfoot." I said, "I believe you." And I said, "When did you see him?" He said, "I saw him yesterday." I said, "Well, I'll be there tomorrow." And I drove up to his place, and he saw two creatures, actually. He had a pond on his property, or they were on the other side of the pond. And I remember he didn't want to go on the other side of the pond. He's like, "You're going to go over there?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm going to go over there. That's what I do, buddy." And so I went over there. I had my walking stick with me. I said, "I'll raise up my stick. You tell me about how high they were. You tell me where to stop when I get around the pond, right where they were standing." I walk around there. He tells me where to stop, and I raise up my stick, and they're about 8 foot high. And right when he's done telling me, I look down, and right where they were standing, right where he told me to stop, was a deer skull, perfectly clean, like it was left for me, right at my feet. It was stunning. And that was the first of many. Well, the second of many, if you count the one that was on the branch. And then, like I said, since then, I just find them again and again and again. I went with a guy who had seen some, and he got screamed at in a Michaux forest. It's the state forest here in Pennsylvania. And he was taking me around to the places where he saw them. He had a couple different sightings. And every place we stopped, I found a deer skull. It was silly. I mean, you know, it was wonderful. It was incredible. But it just keeps happening.
It was amazing.
It's pretty neat.
Well, then absolutely, if you and your family can work it out, I want you to come to the Georgia Bigfoot Conference in the fall. That's going to be October 18th through the 20th. I have a place I want to take you, and I don't want to talk about it. You know, it's like one of my hot spots. It was a magnificent hot spot. We have great pictures. We have tracks of Bigfoot tracks and everything. And if my buddy Eugene Yost, his father is – have you ever heard of Squatch Man? Bet you have.
I'm not sure. There's so many names like that out there. I'm sure I came across it before.
Squatch Man, he has Squatch Man TV. He is a celebrity. And his son is Eugene. I met his – this is a great little story about me. I just, you know, when Facebook says, do you know these people or do you want to know them? And, you know, you just kind of look, say, yeah, no, yeah, you know, whatever. And so I just clicked yes on this one. And so I started to – I always make it a point when I – in fact, I think I did this with you. Whenever I click add a friend, I always send a message like, why did I even talk to you? So that I don't look like some stalker or something. So what I did was I started talking to him, and he started becoming very literate about Bigfoot. I said, "Well, okay, that's cool." I said it was, and then this was like on a Thursday night. This was after Scarycast. It was like 2 a.m. I mean, you never know who's going to be on Facebook at 2 a.m, but I am. So I sent him this message. I said, could I call through, please, and introduce myself? Because I have a couple of podcasts, and you really know a lot about Bigfoot. And the message came back, I don't normally talk to random people on Facebook, but yeah. So I started talking to him, and I said, and it's just exactly like what happened with you. The conversation got so good, I said, stop. You have to stop this conversation right now. I'm free at 11 in the morning. Can we do a podcast? He said, well, sure. And so at like 10:45, and you know, I had a 0% expectation of this guy showing up, right? You know, it was never going to happen. He was right there. 11 o'clock, we started the podcast. That's the way I have to do it, on the half hour or on the hour. So we start talking. We have the best talk about Bigfoot. And he said, by the way, do you mind if I share a little bit about the YouTube channel that my dad and I have? And I said, I was surprised. I said, well, sure. He said, go to Squatch Man TV. And my goodness, it turned out to be Greg Yost's son, Eugene Yost, one of the nicest people you've ever met. And he then, 2 weeks later, when we were having the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, he drove from Indiana down to Georgia to go out in the woods with me. I mean,
nice.
You talk about what an incredible, oh, and you talk about one of the nicest people I have ever met. He has a brand new daughter. He's got a beautiful wife, a great dad, great, you know, just turns out to be one of the super people you would ever meet. And we got great pictures. I mean, we went out our first time and bam, 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 we got great pictures. Things happen.
Awesome.
And it was great, and I'm looking forward to. I hope he's going to be able to come back to the fall Bigfoot. I mean, you know, there shouldn't be any reason that he couldn't. You know, and I'd love for him to do. And I would love for you. We're going to have Matt Delf is a very close friend of mine, and he's a well known Bigfoot explorer, and he will be taking folks out in the woods on Sunday. But I would like for us to go out with Eugene. I think the chemistry is right. I can kind of tell. You know, I think when you do this stuff, you do have a certain degree of psychic awareness. Don't you agree?
I think so, yeah. I think you have to be sort of tuned in to certain things. For me, it's usually kind of synchronicities and stuff that'll pop up and kind of,
yeah,
you know, pop up around
well,
me. And you have to pay attention to
what's
going to
happen. We're going to have the She Squatchers. She Squatchers are going to go off with Matt. They're a unit, and they go out and they get great results. But I'm developing my own unit because I'm really more of a psychic kind of guy. When I was getting my doctorate, I did a lot of research at the Ryan Institute of Parapsychology. I was a research associate. So I'm a little bit different than those guys. In other words, I'm not the woodsy kind of go out in the woods kind of guy. I'm a little bit more, I'll probably go find the nature spirits, and I'll go find some very interesting things, and I'll have dreams about them, which are, I think, advanced remote viewing and all this stuff. So that's the kind of stuff that I do. And I think from what you've told me, you are a presence for Bigfoot, and that's great. And those clans, it might be that we take Robin with us, Robin McRae. And, you know, she's, I think she was, this is the kind of adventure she would like, is to go out with me, Eugene, you and her. And I think it's more of a, it's a little different crowd. You know what I mean? There are different kinds of Bigfoot hunters. Let's face it. The Finding Bigfoot guys, they're big 4x4 trucks. You know what I mean? That's them. But I'm not. And I'm liable to find, a damn UFO.
Well, that's
all
the
thing. So, you know.
Yeah.
So we'll,
I mean,
see if we can work it out. Yeah, this is your invitation, and you can let me know. And yes, I do things like this on the show. And people say, why do you talk to people like it's just a phone conversation? And I say, because it is. We're exploring.
Yes.
We're being Bigfoot explorers right now. And I think it's wonderful because if we don't do this, if we don't in a very contemporaneous manner, you know, plan some things and go do some things, and then where do we report back on it? Where are we going to be the next evening talking? We're going to be right here on either my show or your show, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's where
absolutely.
We're
going to
be. And I think it's so much fun. It's a whole different kind of journalism. This is not the journalism of our parents' era or our grandparents' era. This is immediate journalism. This is planning things and doing them. And like you've told me, I am going to think about the deer skull thing. I'm going to talk to the She Squatchers tonight. I'm going to talk to everybody I know about this, and I'm going to get back. Is it all right? I'll give you a call tomorrow and let you know what everybody thinks.
Oh, sure.
I think it's incredible.
Sure. Yeah, no problem.
I think it's great. And I mean, if we don't do it this way, this is – pardon me. Please go ahead. I talked too much.
The way to – I think – investigating the paranormal, any aspect of the paranormal, it you can't be separated from it, and that's the thing. It's not old school science. It's not in a lab because it's not going to perform for you. You can't make it repeat. You can't make it do what you want, and you're going to be part of it. The only way to get results of any sort is to be a part of it, and in a way, it's a co-creative process. I think. These things, in a sense, need us to manifest, perhaps. I don't know for sure. That's just sort of an idea I have. And, I think it takes two to tango, in a sense. And it takes an observer, in some cases, for this stuff to happen. And there, to me, there's no way to be separate from it. If you look at the great books of look at John Keel's Mothman Prophecies. He was right in the middle of it. He was not separate from it. He wasn't just documenting things. He was right in the middle of the action. And I think that's what you have to do with this stuff. You got to put yourself in the middle of it. And it's weird sometimes. It's scary sometimes. But it's incredibly rewarding. It's incredibly fun. And it's exciting.
It's like I'm sitting here saying, why has it taken me so long to talk to you? You have got the absolute correct idea about how all this happens. I got a short story. It's a great story. When I was, because I have a caricature business, and so we're at some event and in some unnamed town. We won't name the town. And so I met these two guys dressed up as Revolutionary War soldiers next to a cannon, and I said, "It says there I can rent your cannon. I'd like to rent your cannon." And then they just started laughing at me. I said, "Excuse me. The sign says you can rent a cannon. I am interested in renting a cannon. I run Comic-Cons and festivals, and I know some guys that do pirates that would go crazy if you had a cannon like that and could shoot it off at an event, we might could do. All of a sudden, I got everybody's attention. They were thrilled. And I have a very close friend who is a renowned medical doctor. And we meet once or twice a month to talk about anomalous behavior. His very statement to me was, John, I have seen things in my medical practice that you would not believe. They're crazier than what you tell me. And I said, okay. So, that, buddy, Timothy, that is the basis of a firm, everlasting friendship for me. You know, it's like, what the hell is going on? And we talk all the time. And you know, so it's amazing the really great people that are beginning to become involved in this type of thing. And you're right. It takes about three to tango, not necessarily two, but I think it takes three to tango. And so, you know, we'll find out if the stars align correctly. You'll be on my research team that Monday after the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and we'll be out there in one of the most beautiful places you've ever seen. And it might be that we can have Robin with us, and we'll have Eugene if they can all make it. I don't know, but I'll ask them. Everybody listening, you know, I think all 29 people listening to this podcast right now know who I'm going to call tonight, and we're going to see if we can get this group going, and then we will report on Tuesday morning. I have a feeling we're going to be out late Monday night, and we got some special plans. Eugene and I have got some special ideas and plans about doing this type of investigation, because this is where there are a lot of fairies and elves, and it's very close to Clayton, Georgia. So we'll see what we can do. I'm going to go up there on over the July the 4th weekend and do a little bit of exploration. So I'll fill you in on what's going on. But I hope that we could do this, and I hope it'd be a lot of fun. It might take four to tango here, all right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, but what I'm saying is that I think it's sometimes it takes a human presence to interact with this stuff. I mean, I guess we don't know. We don't know what they're doing when we're not around, but it seems like my impression is when, for Bigfoot, for instance, just from talking to all the witnesses I've seen, when you see them, it's almost like they want you to see them. When you hear them, it's almost like they want you to hear them for whatever reason. I'm sure there's different reasons along the way. And I think it follows suit probably with the rest of this paranormal stuff often, maybe not always, but often.
You're so right. You're so right. You just are. And that's kind of a wonderful thing. I have a terrible story that I use, but it's the truth. We have the people who have gone out in the woods for 25 years and have seen nothing. And we have people like me that can just walk out there and I see stick structures. I take pictures mm-hmm. with strange things in them. I mean, and I feel sorry for those folks that have gone for 25 years. These anomalous creatures know who they want to show themselves to. I believe, and you just reiterated that. They know.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a game, don't you? Don't you think it's a little game with them?
Sometimes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I think it becomes a weird little game. I mean, I've literally, my wife used to call it a chessboard I used to have in the woods that was a cairn of stones I would stack, and it would change all the time, and I'd come back and change it. That's a whole other story. But, at first I thought it was people, and I just thought, oh, neat, people are doing this, but they're here as much as I am. This is a local park. I was there a lot. And then one day I went and I changed the stones, and they would always be changed into a sort of a simple triangle, like one stone at each point. No matter how complex I made it, they would always be changed back to this like simple triangle. They were white quartz stones. It was really neat. That's what caught my attention about them originally. It's just this like white quartz cairn that was at the end of this trailhead. And I started changing them, and this happens over time, over time, over time. My wife's a skeptic, and she says, you know, oh, you're playing chess with somebody. So she started calling it my chessboard, just making a joke about it. And one day I was in the park with my wife and kids, and I said, hey, I'm going to run up and check my chessboard and, you know, change it around and come back. And went up there and changed it and came back down and met him about 15 minutes later. And my wife says, oh, I want to go up and see your chessboard. Then we walked back, and in that time, a big leaf had been placed under one of the rocks that I had moved. Now, there's nobody else in the park that day, you know, and it was, you know, that's the first indication I got that something like weirder was going on. Like I did not put that leaf there, and it came back, you know, 15 minutes later, whatever it was, 15, 20 minutes, and there was a leaf underneath this a stack of stones. It was very, very interesting. I don't know what was doing that. I originally thought maybe Bigfoot, and then I shifted to like maybe some kind of land spirit, some kind of earth spirit. I don't know. That kept going that was the summer. That January, that kept going. So all through the fall, I would change it every time. It'd be changed back. And I was there the following January, and it was a light coating the snow on the ground. And I'm walking up to it. I was there alone. There's nobody else in the park. And I hear stone clacks, what sounded like stone clacks, behind me. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And then a bunch of crows started sounding off, and they flew right over my head. Now, there was this murder of crows. They lived in the trees. And they would announce my presence a lot of times, but they weren't really scared of me. Like they would kind of call a little bit. They were used to me. They would, you know, probably saying like, hey, there's a human in the area, or here's that guy again. But this day that the whole group of them just like came out of the trees and flew right over my head. I probably could have reached up and touched them almost. They were so close to me, and, you know, calling as they went. And then I went up to that area my wife called my chessboard, and I'm starting to rearrange the stones. And then I heard what sounded like a wood knock in the opposite direction from the stone clack. And I thought, oh, that's weird. That sounded like a wood knock. And right then I got the smell. I got that like dead skunk mixed with, you know, whatever, urine and just a nasty, nasty smell rolling in. And I got scared because I thought, man, I know what's going to happen here. I know what all these signs mean, you know. And I was by myself, and I thought, man, I don't know if I'm ready for this. And I thought about running, but my knees locked up. I got MS, so there was no running. I was just leaning on my walking stick, and I said, well, here you go, buddy. This is, you know, this is what you're out here for. And then I heard another sound. It sounded like gears clicking, like click, 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 not big gears, little gears, like little metal gears clicking, like three times, click, click, click. And then it all went away. All the fear, all the smell, everything, like in an instant went away. I was able to rearrange the stones. I walked out of there, and on my way out, I found to me, it looked like a trackway. It was just bare, you know, in the light snow covering. I couldn't see toes, but it looked like big footprints, about 16 inches long, about a 4 to 5 foot stride between each one that came off of a game trail and into a cornfield. I couldn't follow it back to the game trail because there wasn't snow in the woods, and I couldn't follow it really into the cornfield, but across this one area. So I don't know for sure if they were footprints. They certainly look like footprints to me. But, you know, it was very, very interesting. Very, very interesting set of events. And the stone stacking kept happening until one day I cut myself on the quartz. So it was very sharp, and I bled all over it, and that ended it. That was the end of it. It's like they never wanted to mess with that, with the stones again, because I bled on them. I thought maybe it would increase the activity or something, but it completely died after that. No more.
It
like
hurt.
They didn't want to.
It hurt you.
Yeah.
They didn't want to hurt you.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
They know what they're doing, and sound like they love you. So there we
go. It could be. It could.
That's a wonderful story. My goodness. So that's great. Well, you know, Tim, I've really enjoyed talking to you. I know that you've got another show that you've got to be on in a little bit. But I wanted to say thank you so much. It's been the most fun, and
Sure.
I meet the best people in this Bigfoot world, and we'll stay in touch. And I hope that you and your family can come down to Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and we'll see.
I'll see if I can make that happen, and I don't think this conversation is over. I think we'll be continuing this at some point.
I agree.
All right.
It's amazing. I don't want any of my conversations to be over because there's a lot more to explore. So, first of all, I want to say thank you so much to author,
sure thing,
podcast host Timothy Renner from Pennsylvania. He's just such a great guy. I've had a lot of fun. You never know how these things work out. I've had three in a row that have been Academy Award winning podcasts. Last night I had David Metcalf talking about the Skeleton Saint this afternoon. We had Michael, I can't even remember Michael's name. Michael was talking about his experience with MindSpeak, and then tonight yours, and it's been wonderful. So everybody, catch all the past episodes of ScaryCast. Check out Bigfoot and Company every week. Matt Delph and I talk to someone important and famous. They don't have to be important and famous. They're nice people in the Bigfoot community. You don't have to be nice to be. You don't have to be famous to be cool. So we've got a lot of great folks. You can listen to those podcasts. Sir, we will be talking again soon. Thanks a lot, and I will be saying sayonara. ScaryCast will return at its regular time of 11 p.m. this Thursday evening with Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, and with Devin Tate from Hollywood. So we'll have the whole crowd there. We've got several good guests lined up. We're actually lining up even more, so just check the webcast. Check the podcast page, which is scarycast.com. Join Facebook, ScaryCast. It's pretty easy. Timothy, be good. Have fun. Okay?
Will do.
And stay safe.
All right.
All right, buddy. You take care. Bye-bye.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.